You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Many people don't realize that modern-day Manhattan would be a very different place today were it not for a group of people called the Sandhogs. They work underground and so are not very visible. But in 2003, Gina LaVey convinced a group of Sandhogs to let her document their work. Her photo essay, Sandhogs, is published by Powerhouse Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show, along with Scott Chessman, who is a working Sandhog. Welcome.
Thank you.
Gina, do you think many people know what a Sandhog is?
No, I don't. And that's one of the reasons I became fascinated with the Sandhogs when I found out who they were in 2003. Because I, as well, didn't know who a Sandhog was. And I lived in New York at that point for 9 years. And I was shocked the more I talked about Sandhogs and my work. People were like, what? What's a Sandhog? And they had no idea who the miners were, and also that there was this extraordinary engineering project happening 800 feet below New York City.
So you asked people for your website, what's a Sandhog, and what did they answer?
A lot of different things. Someone who took up a lot of sand at the beach, a cocktail. I don't know. There's a lot of...
And what happens, Scott, when you tell people you work as a Sandhog?
A blank stare comes over their face.
So what do Sandhogs do, and why? I understand the sand part, mm-hmm. but what's the hog part all about?
I don't know what the hog part is. Everybody asks, what's a sandhog? And it's mostly digging in the sand, and that probably came about from the Brooklyn Bridge when we sunk the caissons. But we're usually in hard rock, a little bit of sand, but mostly hard rock in Manhattan now.
Because, and is Manhattan a special case because of the geology of the city? I'd assume that Manhattan is different than the other boroughs.
Yeah, Manhattan's a little different in that the rock is a little bit younger. It's 470 million years old. And then when you go out to Brooklyn and Queens, it's a little over a billion years old. And the rock is much harder out there, softer Manhattan. But what tends to have so many tunnels in New York is that the rock is perfect for tunneling.
Now, the Bronx, the hills were once a mountain range, weren't they? So is that a different geology again?
No, the Bronx is more similar to, it's kind of a mix, more like Brooklyn and Queens and a little bit of the Manhattan rock up there. So.
Now, you know a lot about geology.
I have a PhD in geology. I earned it while I was working with the Department of Environmental Protection mining the tunnel in Queens.
How many Sandhogs have PhDs?
One.
You?
Yeah.
Gina, why do you think people should know about this profession?
Well, one, it's for our benefit, the citizens of New York, and the fact that there's this trade that's multi-generational. You know, uncles, fathers, sons have been working on the tunnels since, 1900s. And they're working, the water tunnel, as I said, is really to secure the water supply for the 21st century and beyond.
When did that tunnel begin?
1970?
Yeah, early
70s. So it's 40...
Yeah, it's going on for 40, almost 40 years now. Yeah.
Wow. Do we assume it's going to take a lot longer to complete? What's taking so long?
Yeah, well, the financial crisis in the 70s delayed it quite a bit. And then it gets political after a while. We had the Board of Water Supply set up, and their main purpose was to build these tunnels. They built City Tunnel Number 1 and Number 2, but during the fiscal crisis, they dissolved the Board of Water Supply, took the funding, and incorporated it in the city of New York. So now it's more of a Department of Environmental Protection, and they let out a little bit at a time.
And so the first two tunnels are being used?
Yeah, they're active now. They were built, completed in 1917, roughly in 1937, mm-hmm. and they've been going strong ever since.
And they're the reason that New York has some of the best water in the world?
Exactly, and the two tunnels actually that come in, they feed us from the Catskill and Delaware aqueducts, and they're 125 miles north of here. So when you turn on your faucet, your water's actually coming from way upstate.
How does it stay clean? I've always wondered. I know that we put stuff in it, mm-hmm. but, don't tunnels rust?
Yeah, but it's made of concrete, these tunnels.
Mm-hmm. And concrete is perfectly benign? Nothing ever leaches into the water?
Not really. Concrete loves a nice, damp environment, and that's perfect for it, the water. But it doesn't, because the pressure inside that water tunnel, because it comes from the reservoirs higher in elevation, actually leaks out of the tunnel into the ground, and nothing comes in.
So it's all flowing just driven by gravity?
Exactly, just like the rivers. Yep.
After a while, that means you have to go pretty deep, don't you? Or is it such a gradual decline that we hardly would even notice it.
Correct. It's just like a stream, more or less.
Mm-hmm. So. And are they built the same way that the subways were built?
Yeah, correct, except they're deeper. The subways have to be shallower because people have to get in and out, but the engineers and geologists realized years ago, due to the high pressure, it's much safer and it's better for the tunnels to be deeper underground. That's why we're 800 feet down.
Because many of the subways, in fact, were built by simply cutting trenches underneath our streets and then covering them with roofs.
Correct. And they're doing that with Second Avenue now, and it's a nightmare because over the years they have so many utilities under Second Avenue that it's tough just to dig a hole to get down there.
What was it like when you went there the first time, Gina? What does it smell like down there?
What does it smell like? There's a lot of smoke, I feel. It's like damp. The first time I went down there, I was pretty overwhelmed. It was nothing that I imagined, because before I went down there, I did a lot of research on the tunnels, and I only saw black and white archival footage of the tunnels, very kind of photojournalistic. And when I went down there, I was just kind of struck by when it was very massive, especially when you went down in the shaft area. It was huge, and there were so many large pieces of machinery and conveyor belts, and I was just amazed at, one, how they actually got down there and then assembled it down there. But also, it was just extraordinary for me to see the rich colors and a lot of the different qualities of light, the reflective qualities of the light, and also just the sandhogs themselves were just really fun, and their energy was very pertinent, yeah.
The rich colors because the rock has many different minerals in it?
Well, the rock was I thought, beautiful, just the way that the water would reflect on it, but also just the colors of the machines. The jumbo drill is just very bright orange color, and also just the different machinery had colors. And
can you shoot with natural light there?
That's what I did, and that was actually my point, to shoot only in natural light and learn how to manipulate the natural light, the floodlights they had down there, the working lights. As I said before, I only saw images that had a lot of added light to it. When photographers would go down there in the past, they would bring their own flash. So I just really wanted to capture the beauty I saw in the subterranean landscape. And after a while, the sandhogs became my assistants. They were helping me, like, switch the floodlights to, you know, highlight a certain area that was dark. And so I really used the kind of high contrast environment to my advantage.
We have a slideshow of images from Gina LeVay's book on our show page at WNYC.org. The book is called Sandhogs, and it is published by Powerhouse. And also with us is Scott Chessman, who is a sandhog, one of the people who is photographed in the book. We hear about mine cave-ins all the time, coal mines. China, there was another one just recently. Is this a dangerous profession?
Yeah, and cave-ins are a big risk. You know, when you're mining through in Manhattan, just on 67th and Central Park West, we had a cave-in. Luckily, it happened on the weekend. It collapsed on the tunnel boring machine. But it's a real risk, though.
How do people become sandhogs? How did you get into this line of work?
I went to the University of Colorado, and I worked in a gold mine for a little while during the summers. And I came back, and I heard that they were building tunnels, and it was like mining, because basically building tunnels is like mining, just mining space. So I started shaping, and I got on.
A listener wonders how you get into the tunnels. How do you get 800 feet down? Is it the same thing as with a gold mine, or a coal mine anyway, where you take an elevator down?
An elevator down the shafts, and that's one thing. A lot of people think about tunnels and claustrophobic, but really, you can't be afraid of heights either, because you have to go down an 800-foot shaft. So.
Now, who works here? In small towns, it's usually the people of the local town. Mm-hmm. Are there certain groups that are more likely to be found working at Sandhogs than others?
Yeah, we have a great diversity of guys. We have a lot of Irish. They come over, and they've been mining for years over there. And then we have a big group of West Indians from Carriacou. It's a big island, Grenada. And they started in the Panama Canal. When that ended, they came up to New York to work on the subways we were talking about. And so they just stuck around.
So there's a generation handing it on to the next generation.
More or less.
Yeah. Are there any women down there, Gina?
Not sandhogs, no. I think there are a few women that are operational engineers, but there's no women in the union.
So you must have stuck out like a sore thumb when you were down there.
I totally did. I used that to my advantage.
You mean you're an attractive woman and you got guys to help you as a result?
Of course. course. No, I mean, it was, as I said, I mean, really, the project, I mean, I wasn't only struck by this art form of mining, but I also was really struck by the personalities and the spirit of the Sandhogs, which is really what my book is also about the men. And I brought them to a studio to take them outside the tunnel environment into the studio to concentrate on their individuality and the diversity, which is really something that I think is important.
But I'd imagine you got to get special permission to go down to these tunnels because they are dangerous.
For sure. As I said, I started in 2003. I had the idea in August, right after the blackout of 2003, and it took me 5 months to get down to the tunnel. So it was 5 months of just bureaucratic negotiation and trying to get through.
Hmm. 5 months because they would have done that to anybody who wanted
to
go down?
Yeah, I mean, I actually was at an advantage because I was getting my master's at School of Visual Arts, so I was a student. And I think that helped me because I wasn't doing an expose on New York and the water system. But just because they didn't let anybody down there, and especially what I wanted to do. But, of course, at that time, I didn't know where the project would go, and it was going to last 5.5 years later. But it was just it was off limits for security, for a lot of reasons.
So originally it was just something that you were doing for school, and then at a certain point you realized that this was something much bigger than that?
Yeah. When I finished my master's, the Sandhog Project was a website, and that was the first stage of a public art project that I really saw it was. And after I graduated, I just continued, and I went down there when I could. And then a few years after my graduation, I had an installation at Grand Central in 2006, and now the book. And so it was it snowballed into this project that I'm really grateful for.
Now, Scott, Gina's not the first person who's photographed in the tunnels, but this is still a fairly invisible profession you're in. So what was it like to suddenly have a camera pointed at you as you were doing your work, and how did the other men respond?
Well, that's when all the actors come out, it seems like, when the cameras come out. So, you do your work, and you got to get paid to do your work, so everybody concentrates. But Gina just fit in after a while. You know, she was down there so often, and I think that helped a lot.
Yeah, and I also, when I first started working with the Sandhogs, when I wasn't allowed to go down into the tunnel, I was allowed to go above ground and hang out outside the Hog House, which is their kind of above ground locker room and just area to relax. And so when I was allowed to go there for the first few months, I really just started talking with them. I didn't bring out a camera or a video camera until, a few months later. So it was important for me to really establish a nice rapport and friendship with the guys. I don't think they understood what I was doing initially. I had a lot of crazy ideas, and they were like, What are you doing? But I always brought back images after I photographed them, and I think slowly they really started to understand, and then they were my collaborators for sure.
Although I'm assuming that some people felt she's just going to get in the way.
Yeah, the old-timers, because there was a lot of, there's a superstition.
Doesn't matter whether she's a woman or a man.
Well, there's a superstition that no woman should be in a mine, and so that whole thing. And so you have to break past that. And a lot of the old-timers, they were just, real hard Irishmen that just want to do the job,
So how did you get past that?
I guess it was just being down there, continuously. And as I said, bringing back the results. And I think, especially the old-time miners who hated being photographed, it was always a big victory for me when I finally would get them to talk on camera or to just have to sit in like a portrait session. So it was just I think really believing in what I was doing, and I got them excited as well in this vision I had about what the Sandhog Project could be.
Did you invite the Sandhogs when you presented your MFA thesis?
I did, and a few of them came, and also the commissioner of the DEP at the time came as well, and a few other city officials.
So did you assume at that point that you'd finished the project?
No, not really. I always had bigger goals for the project, and because I believe that just a website wasn't the end to it, and a lot more people had to know about this, and I really saw it as a public art installation, and the book is great because just more exposure for the Sandhogs.
Well, in the book you're also quoted as saying you wanted to continue to shoot photos so you could express how you felt down there. Did you feel differently down there?
Yeah, I think I meant the. I wanted to express how it was my interpretation. The book is my interpretation. Obviously, the photographs are my interpretation. I was less concerned about photographing the technical aspects of how the tunnel boring machine is put together or something. I was really more more focused on capturing the beauty I saw and the energy and the soul of the men, and that's really what the book is speaking to.
Now, did the old-timer Scott eventually accept the fact that Gina was going to be there and take pictures of them?
Yeah, she's very persistent.
And there were no cave-ins while she was there.
Right, not while she was there, and that's good. And and it was pretty. Nothing bad happened. So.
Yeah, they were great. I mean, yeah. They always, they respected my ideas, my work mm-hmm. ethic, my dedication to it, and they always took care of me down there.
How did you get to exhibit your work at Grand Central Station? How did that come about?
I wrote a letter to the MTA in the summer of 2006 and described what I wanted to do and how I thought it was important for the city to bring these images to the surface and in a place like Grand Central, and they were excited about it. And they said, sure. And then three months later, I raised money to put the installation together. It was really just a testament to, I think, the human spirit and collaboration. So many people were excited about it, and I don't know how it happened in that short of time, but it did, and it was a really wonderful experience.
I assume that many of our listeners actually saw the exhibit, but for those who didn't, can you describe it?
Sure. It basically had about 10 mural-sized prints. They're like 10 feet by 12 feet. Prints.
So they're huge. They're almost life size.
Yeah, and then they had I had life size portraits of the sandhogs, and they were on light boxes that were in columns. So on each column was 3 foot diameter, 9 feet tall light boxes, and on there were 2 sandhogs on each light box, each column, and so they were staggered around the installation. And then the backdrop of the installation was a rear video projection screen that had. A video of their commute to the heading of the tunnel, and it was a continuous loop of the video with sound of the miners talking about their experiences. And a lot of the interviews are also in the book.
Now, Scott, when will this tunnel be finished? I mean, where does it have to go before it's complete?
Well, this water tunnel is multi-stage, and it actually is a really large undertaking.
You mean it's going to go way past our lifetimes?
Yes. Probably. Well, I'm not
maybe
sure.
Maybe my lifetime, maybe. But not yours.
Well, maybe mine too. But it'll be close because there's stage 1, 2,
Gina
three,
will
four.
See it anyway.
Gina will see it, hopefully, yeah. So we've done stage 2. We've completed stage 2 almost, and stage 1.
And where
done
is stage
2
taking you to?
Stage 2 was through Brooklyn and Queens and through Lower Manhattan. Stage 1 was from the Bronx down through Manhattan out to Brooklyn. So it's more or less to Central Park, I'm sorry. So that's done. Now stage 3 is going to go up to Kensico Reservoir from Van Cortlandt Park. So.
Is it already delivering water, or does it have to be completed before it can do that?
No, it's already delivering water. And the other stage 3 and 4 are basically redundancy programs. So if anything happens to it, they can re-divert the water around. So.
Mm-hmm. And we're assuming also that New York City will change over the years and will need water to get to places that probably – doesn't have it as much today.
Exactly, because we did go pretty far out into Brooklyn and Queens where they couldn't go before. So,
could something like this be done in other major cities, do you think? Or is New York's geology a unique situation?
Well, New York's geology is a unique situation because it's nice hard rock. But also we have nice watersheds just north of us that are a nice source of water. So many cities don't have that option. Really.
Yeah, Chicago couldn't do this, or Los Angeles couldn't do it.
Probably not. Well, Los Angeles might with the mountains if they could, but it would be a major anything. We started so long ago that,
Although, to some degree, this is really an update of what the Romans did with the aqueducts, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Very simple. Great, great engineering feat, but very, very simple in its, scope.
Well, now that you are no longer going 800 feet below the earth, Gina, what are your new plans?
I'm keeping busy. I'm also a commercial photographer, so I work a lot on commission projects. And I have a few independent projects that are right now in development. So,
well, people can get a sense of what we've been talking about by going to our website at wnyc.org. Or they can see videos and images on your website, Gina LeVay, GINALEVAY.com.
Yep.
And my great thanks to Gina LeVay, whose book Sandhogs is published by Powerhouse, and to Scott Chessman, who is a sandhog and also has a PhD in geology. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.